For so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, the commish only said...
We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it...
But no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself.
When black...
This is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up.
Mm-hmm.
Looks okay. The world survives into another day.
See clearly now. The rain is gone.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Ah, can't find it? We can help.
This here is 1240.
1240. It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah, plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's The Joe Beaver Show.
I just chose it because I thought you might be listening.
Well, and it's part of the open right there. Well, oh, I mean, you played part of it, you say, and yet the Sun's Up, Looks Okay, World Survives Into Another Day is from the song you said you played.
Well, it's funny you say that because I just chose one and I had no idea which one I was choosing. And when it played, I go, well, I know this one.
Right. It's his only hit.
Yeah.
Top 25 hit.
Yeah.
Wondering Where the Lions Are.
And I thought, well,
thank you for that. I didn't know you played it for me, but thank you. That was on Music
Friday.
I even
invoked your name.
Music Friday on
Music Friday on the Clue Morning Update, and I chose that one.
And did Dougie say, yeah, I know that song? Or not?
Actually, I played it earlier before he got there. Yeah. It was a little something between you and me. And
you thank you for that.
You didn't hear it.
Morning, Doc.
Morning. What do we got going on?
Well, a lot. Alan Thayer.
And boy, good timing for him.
Yeah, because we have mediation. A motion to dismiss.
Discovery.
We'll find out from Alan and his informed perspective, although we visited a little while ago, and he did say, he said, well, this and this, and he said, I really don't know anything. You know, kind of jokingly, like, what do any of us really know about all that's going down and going on?
Well, you don't know.
But
don't
I trust
know.
Him more from, the legalese standpoint.
Yeah. You don't know, but you know what the parameters are and the rules are. It'd be like if there was a game being played, but we couldn't see it, and they were going to report on it afterward. You could say, well, they're running up and down the court trying to put a ball in the basket, or they're kicking field goals.
Right.
You could say all that with certainty.
Sure.
You just can't say who's doing what.
And if a shot goes in from this distance, it's worth 3 points.
Yeah.
And if
it
goes
there are
a few things that people who know a little bit about something can be a little more helpful about.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
exactly.
Alan Thayer is that man for us at about 11:30 this morning. And then and Canzano was right yesterday. I heard a little bit of his show. I like, John in the afternoon. One of the things I really appreciate about John and about Wilner and about their work together is they have been on the Pac-12 forever.
Yeah.
And they report diligently, regularly on Pac-12 issues and specifically Oregon State and Washington State and the situation that we are both in. And John said yesterday what we've been saying. He said it first time I've heard him or anyone outside of this room, in a sense, even though I'm sure it's been said and talked about in these ways, but you and I are constantly talking about the oddity of this year. So that at 11:30 today, we'll be talking preliminary injunctions, motions to dismiss, mediation with Alan Thayer. Then at 12:05, UCLA's radio analyst, the analog to Mike Pulaski, who joined us last week, and very similar in nature, and Pulaski, a Cal alum and former Cal quarterback, doing radio now. Matt Stevens, longtime analyst for UCLA, former UCLA quarterback, will join us to talk about a football game between the Beavers and Bruins that will take place at Reser Stadium on Saturday at 5 o'clock as we live in both worlds. John, and that's what Canzano said, I thought, rightly yesterday. If you're Washington State and Oregon State this whole season, you have two different tracks going on. You have a football team, two teams in this case, and programs playing at a very high level, competing through just about half the season. You're still a factor in the Pac-12 as we know its final year's race to be the to be a representative in Vegas. You're still, both schools are still alive for that. Everyone, Wilner himself said, this game between the Beavers and Bruins is probably an elimination game for that.
Yeah.
But I think the Beavs are going to win and keep themselves viable and alive. We'll talk to Matt Stevens about the very good defense that DeAnton Lynn has gotten the Bruins to play and how it's almost a role reversal in their world. They're better on defense now than Chip Kelly's offense has been going.
Right.
But the combination of good enough offense and a potent defense is giving UCLA thoughts of, and well, they should be thinking of, winning the Pac-12 championship. So we're going to talk legalese stuff, important stuff, the backdrop to everything we're experiencing this year, and then the specific aspects of a football game we're getting ready
which
for on Saturday.
Which has been the pattern of this show this year, because we essentially started with the first week, especially since we got into conference play, and that is, first couple of days, oh, what did we know? What's happened in the latest with all the Pac-2 versus the treacherous, traitorous 10? And then about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's back into nuts and bolts.
We'll have more of that as we go. Other requests are out. We'll have a men's basketball player tomorrow. It's media day. We'll have somebody on to talk about the upcoming men's basketball season, which is indeed upcoming just around the corner. But in the meantime, we'll have open phones and texts for your comments, thoughts, ideas, whatever the form they take. You want to talk about what's going to happen on November 14th, the preliminary injunction hearing, what's happening now. Alan Thayer is going to give us a sense of his sense of things from the Innovative Law Group in Eugene, expertise in business law, the founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines in Eugene. Loves Oregon State Athletics and has a growing following of people that join him in that and share their thoughts on a regular basis. Alan will kind of give us an update a little bit later on kind of what he thinks yesterday's actions and the motion to dismiss and the mediation that all parties have been agreeing to be participating in, what that all means from his perspective, an informed perspective. And then Matt Stevens to talk about the Beavers and Bruins. And we'll have some other things as we go today, open phones and texts. We have a road show coming up on Friday. We hope you'll join us. We hope the weather gets a little better. We've got tickets to give away to the Beavers UCLA game, a 3-game pack of bowling from Highland Bowl in Corvallis, a free lunch. And there's no, there is such a thing. And that's barbecue hamburgers, chips, and drinks. We had a great time there last year.
Yeah.
At Tim Uwis's parking lot, essentially. The office of Tim Uwis, Edward Jones, your local financial advisor, right across the street from Tim's office downtown, right along the river and near the skate park. You know the territory. We'll be at Tim Uwis's parking lot on Friday between 11 and 1, just south of his office. Hope to see you between 11 and 1 on Friday. In the meantime, open phones, and it's nice to see we already have. Now, I know we have Andy on one. Who is on three? Who's on first? It's Tumwater? Okay. Dave has to be disappointed with how the baseball playoffs have gone. Here's one question I do have on a very general level. Who's watching the playoffs? I'm sorry to put it that way.
I know
Dave is because he cares deeply, but I've never felt, maybe it's because we're so consumed by our football issues, our good team, and the excitement. But John, I just feel like in the baseball playoff world, the idea to bring more teams in and create more rounds and more games and have more teams viable, that whole idea was meant to stimulate more markets and their interest in the postseason. But I Maybe it's just because of where we're at. I don't know. But I just feel less interested in these games than I ever really have.
You know,
I don't get it, but I that's just me. But is it anybody else out there?
I mirror that exactly. And I'll tell you, every fall, I always get excited about playoffs.
There's too many of them.
But for some reason, this year, I don't think I've seen one inning.
Okay. Now, you're not alone. So why?
Mm.
Football is too good. College football has been compelling. The NFL is here. I feel like baseball is bucking against itself.
Yeah.
Creating too many games on too many networks and platforms. How can you say that whenever? Because less is sometimes more.
Uh-huh.
That's a little bit how I feel.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I just don't know.
We've dealt with this over the years, but for me, maybe it's because the Mariners had such a tumble.
And they petered out at the end.
Yeah, they had a chance all the way up until 2 or 3 days before the end. They had a chance, and they never could put it together.
So if you want to weigh in as we go, Andy and Dave, we'll get rolling here, and then talk to Alan Thayer, and then Matt Stevens. We haven't talked much baseball yet, but are you watching it with great interest? And if you are, then please help us. What's been good about it? What's been compelling and exciting? Or do you join both John and me? And I'll perk up around the World Series, but there's too many games, there's too many teams, there's too many series. Or is that just a totally wrong way to look at it? No, how can you say too many? The more, the better. Well, maybe. And maybe that's been your experience. It hasn't been mine. I'm just being upfront. It has not been mine here early in the postseason. Andy called before the show even started, so Andy's loaded for bear, evidently, in Mitchell. Andy, good morning. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Morning, Mike and John. I will make one quick comment, yes, to the question you posed around the baseball playoffs. For myself, I just don't have the bandwidth right now, and I'm a little too in that fog of how the Mariners season ended. Like John said, kind of took the wind out of my sails. And above all, I am a baseball fan, but I'd say above that, I'm a Mariners fan, you know? And so it just hits a little too close to home to check in. And then for the reasons you stated, we got a lot going on with football season, with the Beavers, and our own lot in life right now. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah, I'm not paying attention as much as I have in years past. But the reason I called in is this is, to me, a little bit of an underrated storyline. I haven't seen much on this. Maybe it's been out there, but, you know, I'm insulated out here in Mitchell. But Jonathan Smith, this is a very important weekend for him. A win, by my calculations, crunching the numbers, puts him at 500 as a head coach this weekend. I have him sitting at 31 and 32.
That is correct.
And yeah, so I mean, I haven't seen that talked about a lot. And the significance of that, you might say, well, 500, but everyone in Beaver Nation knows what a lift this has been. And to really look at that and what it's taken, and then just the last 2 years, we're sitting at 15-4 since the start of the 2022 season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a modern day miracle. I remember talking with friends and lamenting, you know, adding it up. From 2015 to 2018, we won 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
9 games across 4 seasons. So just wanted to pass that on to Beaver Nation and just, again, pause for a moment. It's easy to get caught up in everything. It's easy to get swept away in the now. But if he gets to 500 this weekend, it's really an unbelievable feat considering what he took over and where he started from.
It's a good point. We haven't made too much out of it. You know that if he does win on Saturday, and I think he will, he gets to 500. I don't think he's going to be running across the field and jumping up and down and pointing, I'm at 500 now after what I inherited. Jonathan is the most understated, composed coach. I love him for it because even in dealing with, you know, the angst that we all felt about an onside kick or whatever else, he just kind of, well, you know, we thought we saw something and we didn't execute it well. You give them credit. And then he just moves on to the next point. There's no belaboring of anything, good or bad, that happens in these games. It's a business-like, calm, poised approach that serves him and this whole program so very well.
Absolutely, and that's just who Coach Smith is. I mean, he's and he would never be someone who would certainly be celebrating the fact that he's
right.
500. He aims well above that. But I would say to the fans and those of us that have been here for the long haul, this is something we should absolutely celebrate, because there was days I didn't know that we would ever see another bowl game. So we need to celebrate that. And then just going off the UCLA game, I would make this point. I just have a supreme confidence right now. I know UCLA is playing well. I know their front seven looked good. But I just, like, I will take Oregon State against anybody in Reser in the state it's currently in. I mean, I was at the Utah game, and I can't say it enough. It was absolutely electric. Yeah. I just do not see how a team can come in there and find a way to win. It feels, I was telling my buddies this during the game, each third down, each fourth down, every critical moment, it feels deeply personal at this point. You can feel the fans manifesting and taking on all that's happened to us and just projecting that and channeling it. And it is a crazy atmosphere, and I don't see how we drop a game there. And even with Washington coming in, but certainly this weekend, it just feels like the mystique of Reser is at an all-time high, and it would be very difficult to walk away with a win as a road team.
Well,
and in that same vein, I just want to say, Sarah is a legend. I love what she does. Mm-hmm. Love her sessions every week. I've been trying to get this in. I heard her say it a couple weeks ago that the chainsaw is an optional, or to the person operating on fourth down. I think I speak for Beaver Nation. Cannot be optional on third or fourth down, especially on fourth down. It cannot be optional. We need to err on the side of aggression, like Coach Smith. We need to follow his lead, and we need to crank that thing. If you get a penalty, I'm even fine with that. Err on aggression.
Andy, thank you for the perspective and bringing it to our attention that the man is close to getting to something that we weren't sure was going to be possible when he first took the job. He's done it and continuing to play at a high level, and the whole mystique of Goss and the phrase "Goss got him" is almost, it's applying now to Reser. Reser rolled him, Reser rocked him. I mean, whatever the alliterative thing might be, 14 out of the last 15, and it is going to be a tough environment for anybody to deal with. John Wilner's been on that lately too, when he's joined Canzano and the things that he's written. And so you've brought up some great points today. Thanks, Andy, for getting us started. Let's head a little. We were northeast. Let's go further north to Tumwater. Dave, good morning. Ahead of Alan Thayer joining us shortly. Dave, what's on your mind?
Good morning, John. I just love being between Andy and Alan. Andy's a great caller.
Yes.
It's just good to hear him. I hear him on the post-game show with TJ. It's good to have him midweek, so to speak. So, you know, you've heard me say before that my wife is a better person than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So the Packers had a dismal performance last night, and she must see my body language. And she says, well, Dave, at least the Beavers are winning. And, of course, I'm sandwiched between, you know, the Orioles down to the Packers. I got to call Mad Dog Russo today and eat crow because I had said I thought that Jordan Love would end up at least being in the top half of the quarterbacks, and it's just not in the cards. But I'm looking on the up on the positive side. I learned how to sign in American Sign Language, "Go Beavs," and I'll do a demonstration for that at the road show on Friday. Because I think it's a good chance Chris and I will be rolling through. But my main reason for calling, I won't step on Alan Thayer. But I'm just disgusted by the University of Washington's tactic. I'm glad the Pac-2 responded adroitly, I thought, with their comment about what UW's up to. But we'll hear Alan out in depth on that. But I had to give my Drake Toll Locked On Big 12 report for today. For me, Drake Toll is must-see viewing and listening. It's the first person I check every day. You gentlemen will have seen, no doubt, the reports cycling through the media world that Gonzaga is in discussions about joining the Big 12 in basketball. And Drake broke that down, the positives and negatives, but he concluded with this point. It proves the Big 12 is interested in the Pacific time zone West Coast presence, and he doesn't consider Tempe and Tucson to be West Coast. Mm-hmm. This is setting the stage for the eventual incorporation of Washington State and Oregon State in the Big 12. So I just wanted to give that update. I'll yield the floor to Mr. Thayer. Look forward to what he has to say. Thanks for taking my call. Go Orioles, go Bees, go Pack, go.
Okay, buddy. We'll see you Friday, I hope, at Tim Ewis's offices. Thank you, Dave, for the call. Good to hear from you. We will get to Alan Thayer in a moment. I did not see the Drake Toll piece locked on Big 12 and Dave's talking about how much he appreciates what they do, the work they do, the research, the hustle, the insight, all of that gives me a sense of a greater respect, even if I keep asking the question of a la Butch and Sundance, who are those guys? I don't really know who the guys are, but when people who do listen, follow, and have a real sense, a savvy about, you know, who in a sense warrants trust or at least has some credibility, if Dave says they're good, then I believe it. That's enough for me in that sense.
Sure.
To say, okay, what do they say? You know, it's a little bit like Wilner. Well, what's Wilner saying, or what's Canzano saying? Because I feel like they are pretty well sourced. So even though we don't know who Drake Toll and Immaculate and these people are, they may indeed be as well sourced in their world as
and
Wilner
and
Canzano are in ours.
I'll start watching them every day.
Absolutely.
I forgot to yesterday, but I got to get it today.
I have not read anything other than somebody bringing to my attention, maybe it was here yesterday on this show.
Yeah.
That, and the upshot there was Gonzaga is interested, the Big 12 is interested in inviting Gonzaga in, but they're not interested in bringing in Washington State and Oregon State. Somebody said that on this show yesterday.
Yeah, and I think I saw that as a headline of something. But yes, I saw that too.
Okay, so I don't. Maybe Alan can speak to that a little bit, but I haven't gone to the Spokane spokesman review or anybody in the Gonzaga neighborhood to say, okay, is this true? Are you going in? Is it likely? I don't even know how it was couched. Was it couched as Gonzaga likely to accept Big 12 invite or Gonzaga about to go into the Big 12? Do you know?
No, but I thought I saw a texter yesterday say something to the effect of all of that. Plus the Big 12 just is adamantly against Oregon State and Washington State.
Or at least that was the intimation from the texter.
Yes.
But who's the texter and where is he getting his information, or she?
Right.
See, these are the things I don't know, which is most everything in humanity's history. I don't know. But I'm going to go to John before we break and talk to Alan Thayer. John on the Downward Dog phone line. Good morning.
Morning, Mike. Morning, John. I hope I'm not too far off the subject this morning. I'm going to make a comment about Jonathan Smith's coaching style and that onside kick. He's kind of an understated guy, almost a Sharks guy. But his coaching style is kind of on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that gives the Beavers an advantage. And when people get kind of hacked off at him for that onside kick, which didn't work, so it's easy to get mad about it.
Sure.
He had his reasons for it. You know, it was early, and you don't usually see me figure the percentages were better. But if you're going to get hacked off at him over the onside kick, then you might just as well get hacked off at him for the fourth down and third at the goal line where he went for it.
Yep.
And he got it.
Yep.
You know, to be you can't be happy with risks that to succeed, and by the same token get after him for risks that don't. And, and you know, you either are into that kind of coaching and behind him on that, or criticize all of those things. As far as I'm concerned, that's part of what makes the Beavers beginning to be winners. People don't really know what they're going to do. And I just assume he goes for the onside kick and goes for the fourth and third and makes them. Some he's not going to succeed at. But I was unhappy it didn't work, but I sure wasn't very critical of him for him, at least trying it. It's consistent with what he's doing, and overall it's working, and I wouldn't change it.
That's a great perspective, John. It's one I wish in the moment I might have owned a little bit more. I was simply looking at the result. Oh my gosh, we just took momentum. We had the lead. I want to pin them back and see if our defense can begin to find its rhythm and hold them back. And you're absolutely right. It's a little bit like the daring base runner who wants to go from first to third and will occasionally get thrown out when he tries. And maybe he, quote unquote, shouldn't have. But you don't want to tame that that particular animal too much. If you have somebody that's that is capable of making incredible plays and making, you know, every once in a while you may have to bite the bullet and pay a little bit of a price for it, like Travis Bazzano trying to steal third on occasion. He'll get thrown out, but I want to keep him running, though. I hear what you're saying. That's a great point. Yeah. John, thanks for making it. We need to break because Mr. Thayer is on deck, and we'll get him up here. Thanks for making that, John. We'll break, come back with Alan to tell us kind of what it all means. Mediation, motion to dismiss, what's next in his sense of things. Alan Thayer coming up on Joe Radio. So many things to discuss during the breaks that we just barely before we returned.
We got Alan on the line.
Alan Thayer.
3 seconds left.
Alan Thayer joins us. It's been a little while. It's almost been a weekly visit. It feels to me in the world we're in, we could almost do it daily. But there was some news of sorts yesterday. And rather than try to recapitulate it all here and then say, Alan, what do you think? Let's ask Alan Thayer from Eugene, the founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines Business Law, who has been kind enough to join us as an expert in the world of business law and some of the issues that are the PAC 2, the treacherous 10, all of the issues that have been going on. Alan has been a nonpareil in keeping us apprised and informed from his perspective at his informed perspective about what's going on, even though he said to me earlier, I don't know. There's a lot of things that he doesn't know that I don't know that none of us know going on behind closed doors. But he has a better sense, I think, of just what the proceedings and the motions and all of that
and
mean.
And can speak to if this happens, then probably this is what's next.
Yeah.
If that happens, so on and so forth.
So with that, let's welcome Alan Thayer back to the Joe Beaver Show. Alan, thank you again for your time. It is so precious to us. What happened yesterday, from your view, the motion, et cetera, mediation going on, the things we're reading about, from your perspective, Alan, what's happening right now?
Well, thanks, Mike. It's always great to talk with the two of you. So yesterday there was a lot of attention about a motion to intervene by the University of Washington. That was not unexpected. That was I had predicted that. I can't remember if we talked about it or not, but I had predicted that in other places. Interesting, they must have sent out a press release because the media seemed to have the documents before they were available for download from the court docket. So a lot of attention was paid to that, but really it's a non-starter. Oregon State has said at the very beginning in the TRO hearing that any school that wants to intervene, we won't object. So that's kind of a non-starter. What is interesting, though, and received absolutely no attention yesterday, was that the Pac-12 and the commissioner filed a motion to dismiss. And lo and behold, their motion to dismiss really seems to go hand in hand with what was filed by the University of Washington and then what was supported by the other 9 institutions, because they too filed what's called a friend of the court brief in support of UW's motion to intervene.
But Alan, go ahead.
Well, no.
But that's a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, is it not, that Washington had to be the first because it was happening in their state, and then the others followed with their own, in a sense, supporting Washington's motion to dismiss. So it's essentially the treacherous 10 all in the same page. Is that correct?
Well, it's treacherous 10 all on the same page. There are problems with getting jurisdiction over the other 9. The court probably has jurisdiction over the University of Washington, so it makes sense to have them be the one who advances that motion. Interestingly enough, the law firm that is representing the University of Washington in that motion and the law firm that represents the other 9 is the same firm. they have different local attorneys, but the big firm behind the scenes with the teams of lawyers is the same firm in both situations. So the 10 all seem to be on the same page.
Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group in Eugene, founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines, joining us on the Joe Beaver Show.
Alan, is there a chance in this world of people trying to stick it to each other that their side would do things that would draw things out, knowing that Oregon State and Washington State need things to be done rather quickly?
I don't think that is what's going on. I think there was a schedule adopted that everybody agreed to on what goes forward. The temporary restraining order remains in place, and it's just the court process running its way through the system.
So when you say this is not not unexpected, it's a non-starter, why do you say that, Alan, in terms of the motion to dismiss? Do you feel like that's just an obligatory thing that they quote-unquote had to do, knowing that it's not likely? Oh, yeah, that's a frivolous suit that's been brought. We will dismiss it. I mean, is that just something that, from a legal standpoint, they felt compelled to do?
No, I think there's a lot more strategy going on.
Okay.
And in fact, to answer that question, let's jump forward to talk about the motion filed by the Pac-12, because the two are very interrelated. So that motion says, wait a minute, this is really a dispute between the 10 and the 2. It doesn't involve the commissioner. We just want you to tell us what we need to do. But we're not the real party in interest, so we should be dropped from the case. It becomes easier to drop the commissioner from the case if University of Washington has joined the case. So now the Pac-12 drops out, and the University of Washington carries the banner. Another reason why I think that there is some level of coordination between, well, it appears that there's a level of coordination between the Pac-12 commissioner and the Treacherous 10, is that the arguments made in the Pac-12's motion to dismiss mirror the arguments made in the University of Washington's draft motion to dismiss. As part of their motion to intervene, they said, once we intervene, we're going to file a motion to dismiss, and it's going to look something like what's attached.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they could be the same motions. I mean, they're not, but they are very, very similar in the arguments they make. I think it is disingenuous of the Pac-12 commissioner to say, hey, I'm not the real party in interest. Let these other people fight about it. But then the Pac-12 commissioner says, oh, it should also be dismissed for all these other reasons. And these other reasons are the Treacherous 10's arguments. I mean, I don't know if he's taken a side, but he sure seems to be acting in concert.
What are those arguments? From what you can tell, Alan, what is the basis of strategy, in a sense? What do you see their strategy being? I've been asking all along, what does the other side have to say? It sure looks like a good case on the part of the Pac-2. What are they trying to argue?
Well, the first argument is you don't have all the necessary parties as part of the case. And parties are the 10 other members of the conference. Presumably, this motion will be granted, and so it'll be the nine other members of the conference. And there's problems with getting jurisdiction over them because of sovereign immunity between states. And so the state of Washington cannot compel the state of California, i.e. the University of California and UCLA, they can't compel California, and they can't compel Arizona, and they can't compel Utah, and they can't compel Colorado to appear in their state court.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say because the court can't get jurisdiction over them, because they are a necessary party, the case should be dismissed.
Ah, okay.
Now, there is an option for the court to say, no, we're not going to dismiss the case, because if this case doesn't move forward, Oregon State and Washington State will not have a remedy available to them.
Okay.
That strikes me as a pretty decent argument.
Mm-hmm. Argument from the PAC, too. Okay. So you feel that argument, the first one, could be reasonably responded to by the PAC 2 attorneys and everybody that's lined up. They can handle that one. Was there anything else you saw that gives you pause or concern?
There's one other thing in connection with that.
Yeah.
And that is, it was suggested that when there is a dispute between sovereigns, between states, then that case has to be brought before the United States Supreme Court. And that's a really odd situation where the Supreme Court is, in essence, the trial court. Instead of being the Court of Appeals, no, they're the one and only court. And I would think that although the Pac-12 made that argument, they might not want the Supreme Court taking a look at all the ancillary issues that could arise as a result of this, the antitrust issues and some of the other things that we've talked about.
Okay. Alan Thayer joining us, Innovative Law Group in Eugene, Beaver's Behind Enemy Lines. Keep going, Alan. I don't want to, and you're in deep thought here, and I want to make sure we don't miss something that you want to convey to us.
So this indispensable parties argument is one that was mentioned briefly at the TRO hearing, and it is certainly one that Oregon State and Washington State's lawyers are aware of and anticipated,
okay.
And I am sure that they are ready to respond to that question.
Okay. What about the... go ahead.
Now, there's a second argument, and cases are cited. I haven't read any of the cases. I haven't researched this. I don't know. But they say that when you have a voluntary association and there's a question of interpretation, the courts need to step aside and let the association make its own determination, the members of the association, to resolve that dispute. And you may ask, well, what is the matter of interpretation? And they are saying that Oregon State and Washington State misreads this provision in the conference bylaws. And it isn't that notice is given before August 1, 2024, which triggers the no vote provision, but that it is notice of a withdrawal that would occur before August 1, 2024. You want me to go over that again?
Well, okay. In interest of time here, Alan, and I'm a little, maybe, but the misinterpretation, that's the argument on the part of, the treacherous 10, that Oregon State and Washington State have, quote unquote, misinterpreted the bylaws with respect to notice of withdrawal. Is that what you're telling us? And what would what would the attorneys on, quote, our side respond if that were the argument against them?
Well, I think they would argue that, wait a minute, it doesn't really make sense. If you're going to leave after August 1st, 2024, then there is no need for the rest of that provision. I think it would be a common sense interpretation.
Okay. Yes.
And this common sense interpretation will come into play in two places. One is they argue that this is a matter of interpretation of ambiguity where the court shouldn't tread. And then two, even if the court does decide to get into it, we still lose because our interpretation of the notice provision is wrong.
Okay.
So those are the arguments. Indispensable parties, sovereign immunity needs to go to the Supreme Court, which I actually think that would be fascinating.
Yes, it would.
And then the two arguments based upon interpretation of the notice provision.
How strong then, Alan, is... It seems to me the treacherous 10 is treading on treacherous ground for them based on the precedence of USC and UCLA losing any involvement in Pac-12 decisions going forward thereafter, and Colorado, as soon as they announced their notice to leave, or whether they wrote it or not, they said, we're leaving. They lost their voting power as well. Isn't that... isn't that almost a prima facie case on behalf of Washington State and Oregon State about interpretation?
You absolutely think it would be compelling. Also of interest, not only were those votes removed, but Oregon and Washington and Cal and Stanford and Utah and the Arizona schools, they didn't say, oh, no, wait a minute, they still ought to get the vote. That's not what this means. They did not say that at that time.
Right.
They're also arguing, Alan, aren't they also arguing that they haven't given written notice? that's the difference.
I think they've abandoned that.
Okay.
Well, that was the last thing I read, and I thought, how could that be? I mean, they're all over the media. They've you know, the Big Ten itself has already put out its schedule for next year, and you know, it couldn't be more clear that they're leaving.
Wow. Yeah. They were arguing that notice was not the type of notice required by the bylaws. They seem to have abandoned that argument.
So what?
Now, the other interesting point that we learned as a result of these filings is that they have begun a mediation process, all 12 schools, that's being conducted by a retired federal judge, and that they had their first mediation session on October 2nd. And they are scheduled to continue to mediate through the end of October.
What happens?
Yes, what's going on?
And are they in together? Are they on Zoom? And does the judge say, "Now, what do you want? Now, what do you want? Now, come on, guys." I mean, how does that go?
So, typically, I've been involved with many of these mediations, and I suspect that this one is by Zoom. Mediations are more effective when you get everyone together. They're also more effective when you don't schedule them out for a month. You get everyone together. You impress upon each side how they don't really want a lawsuit because it's going to be expensive and it's going to be unpredictable, and you ought to reach an agreement. And then they kind of go back and forth with settlement proposals, and then parties don't make much progress until about 5:30 or 6. People start getting tired. People start getting hungry. And then they reach a settlement before 7 or 8.
Alan,
that's how they typically go.
Okay,
this one's going to be a little different. And I really believe that in order to have a settlement, I think you need to get ESPN, Fox, and possibly CBS involved, because they are the true powers in college sports these days.
Mm-hmm. Alan, we'll turn you loose and keep here in a minute. I do have one last thing, and that is just a sense that you may have about how this process will play out, what it means for the purposes of November 14th, what kind of ruling you're expecting then from Whitman County, the preliminary injunction. What happens on that day? What's happening right now with respect to that? And what do you expect from your sense of things on November 14th? And then where do we go from there?
Well, if the conference's motion to dismiss is granted, then that's the end of the lawsuit.
Okay.
I don't think it will be. On October 25th, Oregon State and Washington State will file their response, and we'll know a lot more about their arguments in opposition to the arguments made by the conference in its motion to dismiss. I think we're going to know things before November 14th. I think yesterday, John Canzano indicated, maybe it was today, I'm losing track mm-hmm. of some of his articles. He's done some great reporting on these issues, and I know that Oregon State fans have mixed opinions of Canzano for, I mean, I understand why,
mm-hmm.
but he's done great reporting here. But he seems to have a source which suggests that you'll hear something from Oregon and Oregon State before the transfer portals open for the various sports. And the first transfer portals open, I think, for men's soccer and a couple of other sports around the beginning of November.
Okay. So
I think we're going to know a little bit more even before the hearing on the preliminary injunction.
But know enough, you know, it's a little bit like somebody walked into Los Alamos and said to Oppenheimer, it might have been Niels Bohr, is it big enough? That was the question. And so I guess what I'm wondering, Alan, is, well, what we hear before that, let's say John's reporting is accurate, and you're right, he's done tremendous work, he and Wilner have, no doubt. But will we know enough come November 1, let's say, for argument's sake, to have a feel about where this is all going?
Well, I think it's going to be a long time before we really have what we know enough, because this is a situation where you want to try to land somewhere and then advance in the next round.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to land and advance, I think that forecloses some opportunities and opens other opportunities. And then there's the real piece out there. And this all is going to take time to develop.
And
so when we know about the future, I think we'll know about the short-term future, unless there's an absolute home run struck
mm-hmm.
in settlement negotiations. But even then, there's future rounds of realignment coming.
Final thing, Alan, today, real quick, because we need to get a break in here. We're going to talk football with Matt Stevens, the UCLA radio analyst, former quarterback, in a moment. Deseret.com reports, as of right now, Gonzaga would be the only further addition to the Big 12, as talks with UConn and the Big 12 have not continued, according to Seth Davis for CBS Sports. The conference, Big 12, the conference is not interested in adding Washington State or Oregon State, the final Pac-12 schools without a new home, sources told Brett McMurphy. Now, just that alone, do you think that's for right now in this moment and that could change, or do you think that's going to hold?
Well, I had absolutely no interest in Oregon and University of Washington until Fox told them that to add
okay.
Oregon and University of Washington.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. So the pressure that you've talked about, a sense of pressure and squeamish about discovery, could change that sentence about right now we're not interested in adding, but that could change overnight, almost literally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Alan, thanks.
Hey, one last thing, if I may. We're going to be going into some of these motion to dismiss issues in a little more detail in a video I'm going to be working on this evening. If people want to view that, they can go to YouTube and search for Beavers Behind Enemy Lines.
Absolutely.
And it will be posted there.
Thank you so much, Alan. We'll keep that word out. YouTube channel Beavers Behind Enemy Lines for more information on all of these matters. Thank you again, sir, for your expertise, and we'll talk again soon. We appreciate it. Go Beavs. Thanks.
Well, thank you to both of you for all you do for Oregon State.
Thanks, Alan. We'll break. We'll come back. 1240 Show Radio.
All right. We got about 30 seconds
left.
What?
Just so many things.
No, I told you three. You burned 3 minutes after I told you we had to go to a break.
Oh, so we can make good coming in next hour.
I'll figure it out. But you ignored me. That hurt.
I know.
Well, we're down and done in 10 seconds.
Gonzaga. How about Gonzaga? Yeah. They would compete. They would join only in men's and women's basketball, baseball, soccer, volleyball, and men's and women's tennis. Got an hour to go.
Hello.
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 Let's hear a story.
Someone somewhere a long time ago made a suggestion to a kid in L.O.
You ought to go on the radio.
But everybody knows.
Take two to make a radio program.
Down south, the Row River kid wasn't so sure, and still isn't.
I'm just a country boy. I'm even sure I won't stay in this dang old radio business.
Ah, but stay they both did, and met up in the Mid-Valley 20 years ago. With a compulsion to tell them about the Beavers in Corvallis and beyond.
Tell them in Eugene, Albany, Salem. Tell them!
And in Jervis and Amity and Shedd and Lewisburg. Ah, but not just for today.
Five of those radio programs every week. Have you a radio program coming in right now?
Yes, but a reminder.
Life's short. Calm down. Life's short.
Yes, call now, because the Joe Beaver Show is on the air on 1240 Joe Radio.
We appreciate you tuning our way, and we look forward to you calling, not necessarily now, slight modification there, because we have a special guest on the Downward Dog phone line. The University Honda text line is always available, 541-497-5356. We'll get to calls and texts to wrap up the show a little bit later as we head towards 1 o'clock. It is a pleasure to welcome, and it may be the first time, and that's, you know, we've been remiss here on the Joe Beaver Show to not have
a conversation.
It's possible. Well, partly because we don't play UCLA often enough.
That's
and
true.
May never again.
That's true.
With that as an introduction, maybe our last chance, Matt Stevens, former UCLA quarterback, radio analyst, for the Bruins, coming to Corvallis with a hot football team, particularly on the defensive side, to help us take a look at the matchup, his own reaction to, and UCLA fans' reaction to, the move to the Big Ten, et cetera, et cetera. It's a pleasure to welcome Matt Stevens to the Joe Beaver Show. Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. It's been too long since UCLA and Oregon State have played, so
it really has.
This game's happening on Saturday.
There's a lot of things. In fact, it's been 8 years since you guys came here, and you, I'm sure, have some memories of the game, and that Josh Rosen was hot. You guys beat the Beavers 41-0 in 2015. It's hard to believe, Matt, but that's the last time you guys were up here.
You know, and I love Reser Stadium, the atmosphere. I'm so excited to see the remodel, what they've done. I have friends that play for Oregon State, and they just rant and rave about this football team and Jonathan Smith. And I really am a big fan of Jonathan Smith. He and Chip Kelly came in at the same time. They turned programs around, and right now this is going to be a pretty good battle between two really good coaches.
We'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. Matt, your own, when you talk about, you know, your friends who go to Oregon State, you're clearly then, as we all are, aware of the undercurrent, the storyline that never goes away for this final year of the Pac-12 as we've known it. You must have some empathy for where your Oregon State friends are, where the Beavers are, where Jonathan is, in the uncertainty of what's next. You guys have a landing spot, the great conference known as the Big Ten. What are your overall thoughts about what's happened to this conference?
It's just really sad. Everybody I talk to that looks back on the Pac-12 are just, they can't believe that the upper management couldn't keep it together, work out a TV deal. This is a great venue. All these teams should be playing in prime time. It's just really sad the way it was run. I think it was one of the top conferences, and it is the top conference this year with all the great teams. I really do think Washington State, Oregon State, they're going to end up maybe in a Big 12 or the Big Ten. I mean, they're just too good of teams. But if they start their own conference, you know, they're going to win it every year, one of these two schools. But I do think, you know, a program like Oregon State especially belongs in a big conference.
Matt, Chip Kelly, your own coach, threw something out that a lot of other people have sort of said amen to, in the sense of, why not let football kind of do its own thing, and with respect to the other sports, let them continue in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the Big Ten, et cetera. What did you make of that? Do you think that we're moving toward a future that will look somewhat like that?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things going on with that, and that's a great concept. But I think that is something that should take place because football, you know, is its own sport, but it should still represent its university. They're going to be redoing the NIL, the NCAA, making, you know, some restrictions on that, the transfer portal shorting. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going to be changing in college football. It's evolving so fast that I'm sure the end product is going to be, you know, a year or two away, but I don't think the model they have right now is going to work for everyone. So, and that's what you want. You want it to work for everybody.
Matt, I've asked this question of a lot of people around here and myself and fans and friends, but people don't want to believe that it's true, and that is the evolution of Chip Kelly. From when he was at Oregon 15 years ago and the read option offense, and of course the speed too. I think everybody, a lot of teams are doing, we just saw it with Cal last weekend, are doing the whole turbo, get up to the line of scrimmage as fast as you can. That's nothing new now, but Jonathan Smith thought maybe Chip Kelly was the one who kind of invented that too. But this idea of the quarterback pulling and going and doing all kinds of read option that we saw in those early days with Marcus Mariota and others at Oregon with Chip Kelly, doesn't seem like that's happening very much. First of all, do you think it's because defense is caught up or because quarterbacks kept getting hurt? And two, and I never asked two questions, but I am this time. And two, do you think that, how's he doing with it with UCLA? I mean, it's not the Chip Kelly that we used to know.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Chip Kelly, you know, he had that with DTR. I mean, he was able to run fast. And even this year, you look at time of possession, if it wasn't for last week against Washington State, where UCLA dominated time of possession, they were about 120th in the country, only having the ball for about 25 minutes a game. So I think Chip Kelly does want to go fast, but the problem with Chip Kelly this year is he's got an 18-year-old quarterback. And the 18-year-old quarterback, he's not a runner like DTR. So you're not going to run zone read and be able to have the quarterback keep it and go around in. You're going to have more design plays, handoffs, and sometimes you just need to be patient with a young quarterback because you need to have him throw short passes and not go for it every play and get the ball downfield. It's personnel with Chip Kelly. He does a really good job of evaluating what he has and what he can do. And yes, he wants to go fast, but if he has to go slow, he can go slow. He's a master of the running game and setting plays up, but he can really tinker with the little things and get a good running game going year after year.
Matt Stevens, UCLA radio analyst, joining us. We'll get to the other side of the football in a moment, which really seems to be the big and emerging story for UCLA football with a new coordinator in the LA Times columnist saying, pay the man before he leaves. So we'll get to that in a moment, Matt. But on offense and the running game, how good is it this year after losing Zach Charbonnet? It felt that people believed that there might be a downturn. What do you see happening in your run game this year?
Well, there is a downturn when you have a Zach Charbonnet and a DTR. They're so effective runners. And that was to be expected. And then you have, you know, three of those offensive linemen are playing in the NFL right now. So there is some guys that have transferred in, so some guys that have been in the system for a while, and it took them a while to get the communication down. And that was the big word on the offensive line, communication. And then also, you know, with the new running backs, you've got to be good blockers in the Chip Kelly offense because when you have a young quarterback, everybody's going to bring the heat on the young quarterback. So blitz pickup is a big deal. I think it's taken all the way to the Washington State game for the unit to finally get in sync, to be honest with you. I think they had a lot of bad communication in previous games. They had a lot during the Utah game. I think that bye week really helped them out, and they proved they could run the ball. Now, the running backs are a little different. You know, UCLA has Carson Steele. He's a Marvel character, Thor, and he's a hammer. He's about 235 pounds, and he's just a real straightforward north and south guy, T.J. Hardy. But they finally put in Keegan Jones last week. He's a speedster, sort of a changeup, which I think the running game needed for UCLA. You need a fast guy. Chip's always had a fast guy. But I think this running game finally hit its stride last week against Washington State. And Washington State's not the defense Oregon State is, but they did hit their stride.
Well, Washington State's offense is pretty good. And what you guys do, we'll get, I have one other thought to follow John's question, and we'll get to the defensive side and the great job that DeAnton Lynn has done as the coordinator. But that is John's question about in this, have defenses, did defenses make adjustments in the overall ability to deal with a zone read, in your opinion, Matt, and rein it in a little bit so that Chip and others couldn't keep doing things the way they were doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's mostly the athletes. I mean, and defensive ends have gotten a lot better. You know, you're probably your best player now on defense is your defensive end that can collapse down. Mm-hmm. And I still think if you had a running type quarterback, Chip would be running that all the time, and he'd be more like an RPO guy. But like I said, Chip can tinker with that zone read and make it work regardless of the personnel. I just don't think he has that quarterback to do it this year.
Okay. All right, let's talk a little defense. It's vastly improved. What is the strength position, if you will? Is it the secondary, the line, the linebackers? What's going on with UCLA's defense?
Well, number one, I think it's the defensive tackles, and no one ever talks about them. They're not the stars of the defense, but Jay Tawia is really the catalyst, the anchor of the defensive line. Whenever you have middle penetration, that just messes everything up. And because UCLA has middle penetration, that frees up the defensive ends, the linebackers, and everybody you want on that defense. So you have to account for those guys in the middle. That's the key. And now UCLA, they have three special guys at linebacker. They're all the three leading tackles on the team. They're fast. They're different. They can play run or pass. And then you have Liatu Latu on the outside. Liatu Latu is going to be a first-round draft pick. I think this year, yes, everyone's counting his sacks. It's very exciting when he gets to the quarterback, but he's done a good job against the run. He's more of a complete defensive end, edge rusher, and I think really that's making a big difference on the UCLA defense. But Danton Lynn, you're right. I mean, you want to pay him a lot of money. I think he's going to be a head coach next year. I mean, he's just really good. He knows not only schematically what to do, he also knows how to rotate personnel.
Yeah, it really is phenomenal when I look at numbers. And what after, here's what I wonder, Matt. I know it's odious to make comparisons, but it makes us a little nervous here to see what Washington State did to Oregon State and Pullman, and then what Washington State didn't do against you at the Rose Bowl. I'm just wondering what you saw in that game from Coach Lynn's defense, the personnel that you've cited. Was it just a good matchup for them? I mean, and the Beaver matchup wasn't so good against Cam Ward and company in Pullman?
Washington State can't run the ball, and that was the big problem. And UCLA was daring them to run. They played a one defensive tackle defense. Sometimes they didn't even have a defensive tackle. It was just three defensive ends. And then the rest were linebackers, and they always played nickel. And because you can get there with four guys that UCLA can, you can play a lot of coverages. And then in the end, in the second half, UCLA was rushing three, and then they have an athlete, Carl Jones, who's a defensive end, pseudo linebacker, and he was spying on Cam Ward. So if Oregon State were to play Washington State, let's say this week, Trent Bray would do that exact same defense Danton Lynn did, and I bet Oregon State would have dominated that game.
Hmm.
So it was just sort of a philosophy and a personnel package that Danton Lynn did to stop the Cougars.
Did UCLA play more man coverage or zone in that particular game?
They were able to do both, to tell you the truth. They could play man or zone, but they did play the majority zone. But they were able to have a couple of safeties the entire football game. They didn't have to bring up the safeties. Or, I mean, literally, Washington State, they couldn't run the ball against five down linemen. And UCLA was daring them. And if you can't run against five down linemen, you're not very good. And that's, you know, Washington State got exposed for the rest of the year.
Last thing then in terms of the matchup, and Matt, we appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing you in Corvallis. Trent Bray's defense, the Beaver offense, what you've seen, if you go to work during a week and get ready for the next opponent, what are some of the earmarks of what you've seen from Jonathan Smith? That big game even that he had against Chip down there in 19, the last meeting, was indicative of what he can do on offense, but now he's got a defense that complements what he does. What are your overall thoughts about this team that you're facing in Corvallis at Reser Saturday night?
Well, first of all, UCLA is going to be coming in with an 18-year-old quarterback. You know, it's going to be a second tough road game experience. So that's going to be a big question mark. You look at this Oregon State team, they got a great offensive line. It's going to go against a great front seven of UCLA, two great running backs. That's going to be really the matchup of the game, how those two units sort of play against each other. UCLA is going to put pressure on DJ, your quarterback. He's going to have to get to a second and third option. He's going to have to move around. He's going to have to make plays. He's not going to be able to stand in the pocket like he did against Cal and sort of pick a secondary apart. I think defensively, Oregon State, great linebackers that run side to side, put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Trent Bray is going to put heat on Dante Moore. He's going to challenge him to make throws under duress in man coverage. And until Dante Moore can do that, the pressure's just going to keep coming. And that's what happens to an 18-year-old quarterback. UCLA does have a physical run game. I think, you know, Oregon State, they're going to come up to the line of scrimmage. They're going to stop the run. They're going to dare UCLA to throw. And that's going to be the matchup on the other side of the ball when those two units are going against each other. And you always got to watch out for Jonathan Smith. You never know what's going to happen. He's going to go for it on fourth down. There's going to be something in the special teams. I think Chip Kelly's going to be ready for it. He knows Jonathan Smith, but you always got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, and the onside kick thing worked well at UCLA. The last time he tried it sort of unexpectedly, you may recall that the Beavers were already up 14-0 in the first quarter. Any onside kicks and recovers and scores again? Matt, you recall that pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Jonathan Smith, I mean, he's, you know, younger than Chip Kelly, but I think there are a lot of similarities in their coaching styles. Both coaches, you know, they push the pedal down to the metal, and they want to go for it on fourth down. They want to take chances, and, you know, I think Jonathan Smith does a little bit more in the special teams than Chip Kelly, but there's a lot of similarities between the two coaches, and that's a real compliment for both coaches.
Matt, it's been too long, 8 years since you made the trip here. We're looking forward to seeing you again, and I hope it's not the last time as this all plays out. It's a strange world we're in, but I'm glad UCLA is coming to Reser Stadium Saturday. That has a good feel and sound to it. I hope it's not the last, but I'm glad you're coming this weekend. Thanks for making time for us, Matt. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I can't wait for that chainsaw on third down.
Okay, we hope you hear it a lot and that it's an effective tool. Hey, we'll talk to you soon, Matt. Thanks for the time. Matt Stevens, radio analyst for the UCLA Bruins. Good stuff, technical stuff, good stuff. Boy, it's a good matchup, John. It's a compelling
matchup.
It is.
I was just looking at some of the defensive comparisons. 18 sacks for them.
17
for the Beavers. 140 yards lost on those sacks for the Beavers. 131 for UCLA. It's
impressive what they're doing defensively.
Take the under.
I don't even know what that means.
I know.
I'm not
either.
Familiar with that
term. I'm just parroting somebody.
Yeah.
I heard it.
Not familiar with that term. As Seinfeld memorably said in an episode about, you're the kind of person who gives a gift and then asks for it back. That makes you what? And his girl, what, an Indian giver? And Seinfeld, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that term. So let's take a break. Open phones and text down the stretch. 497-5356. I'm going to talk about motions to dismiss or the Beavers in motion offensively. Whatever you want to talk about, here we go. 497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line, University Honda text line. Baseball playoffs, are you watching with rapt interest? If you're not, why not? Seriously. It could just be, we're a college football town, and that's our life and our world. When the World Series comes, yeah, you'll come around a little bit. It just feels like there's all these games on. And I'm with you, John. I've seen maybe an inning of postseason play at most.
I don't have any desire.
And it's not like I feel like I'm missing out either.
No.
So those of you who are watching every inning, every pitch, every game, tell us what we're missing. 497-5356 on Joe Radio. So a texter says on the Downward Dog or University Honda text line, we're going to the Downward Dog phone line in a moment with Doug. But A texter says, if our teams were in the playoffs, we'd be watching, which is true.
Of course we would.
And if our teams, meaning, I'm sure the ratings are probably decent in Atlanta and Philadelphia and Phoenix and L.A. So that's a good point. But what about the rest of us, the great unwashed? Or maybe that texter's referring to the Mariners. But the rest of us, all I'm saying is there was a time in life when baseball's postseason drew us all in, when there were fewer rounds and teams, so that you think about the Red Sox and Mets in the 86 American League Championship Series. Everybody in America who cared about sports watched then. Now I'm just saying, I don't think these playoff series, as good as they may be between the Braves and Phillies, people in Corvallis and Albany would watch in 86 and are not watching in 2023.
Well, as I think it was Colin said, baseball is a regional sport where it once was a national sport.
It's become a niche.
Yeah.
Or we grew up saying, what's your niche? And now everybody says niche. Somebody please explain that to me. I'm serious. It's a niche sport. You did not grow up. I don't say it today. Saying niche.
No, I still say niche.
Okay, but then when and how and who decided that it's niche? That's my biggest question ever.
I remember. It was 1992.
92, that long ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
1992.
Was it Dan Patrick who first said niche?
And I think it was Dan Patrick.
Okay, thank you.
Who said niche.
Well, I'm glad. I feel better now.
It's been that way ever since.
I feel better now because I've been puzzling throughout my life in the last 25, 30 years. Niche. When did niche become niche? Anyway, we've got Doug in Salem, 497.
When did become dot?
It's a niche sport now, is what the man's trying to say. And it used to be a national sport. Now it isn't. Baseball just simply isn't anymore.
Does everybody say Vaz now?
Instead of Vase? Gosh, they shouldn't. I said Cody Vase, I think, or not Vaz. 497-50-VAZ-5356, 497-5356 on the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line. Anybody, again, who studies language and words, somebody please explain to me how niche became niche.
Here's an answer from today's youth.
Okay.
There's too much. TJ.
TJ Mathewson says what?
Well, he's out covering stuff for us.
But there's too much available to watch everything.
Too much on TV.
So more is less.
Yes.
Thank you. Doug in Salem, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, something nobody's talking about, and that's we're almost a sixth win. We're almost bowl eligible, and nobody's saying anything about that. Just a couple of years ago, that would be a big thing, you know. And that's a that's an indicator of a successful season that we're going to a bowl game, any bowl game. But now we're talking good bowl games, so that's one thing I want to point out.
Good point. Yes.
Yeah. Besides all the law stuff. Anyway, you might get a wrestler on there. I noticed that we got a kid from Marshall High School in Coos Bay that went off to Oklahoma, and was probably Olympic level wrestler. So you might look into that. I know it's everything's football nowadays. And we got a really good wrestler. And then off to my terrible sources, I'm glad you're getting into locked in 12 here, Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a booster here in town, a friend of mine here, a booster, Oregon State booster, and he was at the Utah game. And he has another friend who knows somebody who talked to a lawyer up in the law, up in the laws areas where the rich people are. And he said that lawyer said that if Discovery goes all the way, there's going to be some Pac-12 athletic directors, maybe even a president or two, lose their jobs. So I know it's not quite, John Canzano level of,
I hear you, Doug.
Knowing for sure, but John is backed up what I was saying, and back 12, the locked in Big 12 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
About the thing that mystifies me there is that I read what Gonzalo said, or written about, but it didn't quite fit in with what I heard at the hearing, because I was at the hearing, Thursday about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And our president and athletic director indicated at the hearing that they were not part of that whole, ESPN, $30 million versus $50 million fiasco. So it's just, I don't quite know what to make out of that, because I was at the hearing, I heard what I thought I heard, that they were just we're not involved in all that. So it's something somehow I hope somebody can tie down, you know, and maybe you being the Joe Beaver show, you can try to figure out what was going on there. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Doug, thank you.
It's been a fantastic season.
Yes, it has. And you made a great point right at the outset that the very fact that being one win away from bowl eligibility, it is in Hank Hager's notes. And if the Beavers do win Saturday, it will be the earliest that they've ever, in terms of the calendar, become bowl eligible if they do win their sixth game Saturday against UCLA, the earliest ever. But that, you know, that phrase itself, bowl eligibility, is also fairly new in life. Maybe older than Niche, but fairly new. But on the other, and you're right, we're not making a big deal out of it because we, in a sense, feel like there are bigger things out there than just achieving that, so it's not getting a lot of attention, and that's a good thing.
Yes, but it's a big thing. You know, it means that we can travel, maybe go to Hollywood Bowl of all places, which we've never been to, you know.
It'll be
a nice landing spot for us, finally.
Well, Doug, don't sell the guys too short. There may be bigger things than that even as we go. Good to hear from you, Doug. Thank you for the call. Open phones on the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line. The numbers are the same for both, 541-497-5356. It's sort of rich to me, in rich in the pejorative sense. But Action Network's Brett McMurphy later reported that Gonzaga would only join the Big 12 in men's and women's basketball, baseball, women's soccer, volleyball, and men's and women's tennis. And it made me think, well, what are they? Only?
Right.
I mean, that sounds like a bunch of sports to me.
It kind of makes you ask, well, what are the other sports that wouldn't be?
But baseball, and it just got me, I mean, Gonzaga baseball would have a Power 5 home. I just somehow, some way, I read that and go, what is the world we're living in? Gonzaga's baseball is good, but you understand what I'm saying, Doc? I mean, to see in print there that Gonzaga basketball,
ridiculous.
And that here's Gonzaga baseball, good program, but they would have a Power 5 home and somebody else we know wouldn't. It's just,
it can't be.
What universe are we in?
It can't be.
Let's go to Harold up next on the Downward Dog phone line. Harold, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, thought I had is that one of the reasons that the Pac-12 wants out of that lawsuit, they don't want any discovery written up. There's those television giants have no desire to know, because I remember that the first time when you talked to Mr. Thayer about that, he says one of the questions he would really like to know is, when did the USC president know that USC was going to the Big Ten?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's the one that put the kibosh on the Pac-12 in taking in other players, expanding.
Yes. Yes.
And those TV stations, TVs, they don't want that because it's going to open up a can of worms that they can't afford.
And that gets, Harold, a little bit to what Doug said. He said he heard from a friend who heard from another friend who talked to a lawyer who said, that all sounds a little bit like too much hearsay, and that in itself, we can't put a great deal of stock in that conversation that Doug reported per se, but it does seem to be in the spirit of what you're talking about, that there are probably some people who are, if not trembling, beginning to get a little nervous and squeamish about the whole specter of evidence in coming forward about what's gone on here the last couple of years.
Oh yeah. They don't want discovery.
Yeah.
They don't want them digging into their emails.
Yep.
Guarantee you.
Right.
That, and what Mr. Thayer was saying, that the Oregon State attorneys, that they have a large antitrust department.
Yep.
they'd love that nothing better than to go after Fox.
Great points, Harold. What did she know and when did she know it? A phrase, you know, a variation on a theme, right? Thanks for
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. Harold and Sandy, let's get a little closer to home and visit with Dean in North Albany. Dean, good afternoon.
Well, hey, Mike, and what a great job you guys do through the season. And then you got this added dimension of all this legal business going on. And just amazing work, actually, through the season. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very kind.
If I can stay on point here, I thought the main thing I heard in that interview with Alan was at the very end, where he said Fox and ESPN, CBS could be part of that mediation.
Right.
And that will be a little bit uncomfortable for them.
I agree. Yes.
And then another thing I wanted to add was about 2 weeks ago, the CFP, the football committee, canceled the meeting. And, you know, Mr. Schultz up there in Washington State is part of that committee. And the reason they canceled it was unsettled business with the Pac-2.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, I mean, this is huge. I mean,
yes.
The CFP is delaying meetings on expansion of the playoff format until this business gets settled. Really? I mean, that's interesting, I think.
I agree. And even Bill Hancock himself said, the chairman of the CFP, that, well, we've never had a two-team conference before. I guess we have one now. That there's a bunch of money that they're owed. And so that's got to be sorted out. Hancock, as Dave from Tumwater has pointed out, essentially affirmed what Alan Thayer, in his sense of things, that what the case is for the Pac-2, and it's a pretty good case if Hancock is going as far as to cancel meetings and say, we've got to sort all of this out, which means that big pool of money from the CFP contract could indeed be split two ways, and that there's a lot of people that don't want that to happen either. So discovery, money, et cetera, is all in big play here.
Yeah, and I think delaying the CFP meetings and developing the new playoff format is a super big deal. I think the discovery, the things that will be found about maybe Fox Sports, perhaps, even some of our so-called partners here, and the Pac-12 is huge. And I also think the performance of both Washington State and Oregon State were basically, I think we're both in the top 20 now, but especially Oregon State, who's becoming a marquee team like this Saturday, has been helpful as well. It's like, what the heck is going on? How could this be? It's kind of a travesty, kind of. And everyone sees it. It's not right. And so in sum, my ballpark estimate this morning, this afternoon, is about a 60% chance that we go to the Big 12. But I'm very conservative when I look at this world and everything. And I would say higher, but, you know, when you're in the legal realm, you never know. And we're kind of there right now. We're kind of in the legalities.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of wild cards there. So we'll see where it goes. Maybe the worst case scenario is we build out the Pac-2, and we have some funds, and we go from there. But I strongly recommend that they have an opportunity to join a conference like the Big 12 for baseball, certainly for football and all the other sports. And then I strongly recommend breaking it into three divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, for football, we'd only have a couple few trips to the Midwest or back east.
Yep.
We either have home games, or we're playing down in Arizona, up in Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a heck of a making sense argument. It's logical. It's good for the Big 12. And I think, by the way, there'll be some money to grease the skids there from whatever networks who feel most vulnerable. They kind of need to do it. But I still have a 40% chance that none of this will happen, and we're going to revert back to the Pac-2. But right now, I'm just guessing, Mike.
Yeah.
And always looking for further calibration, and that's it.
Thank you, Dean, so much. Let's sneak one in before we visit with Louis Quintana, the track and field and cross-country coach from Oregon State, in our final segment today. That just came through. We'll talk to Louis in a minute. Hi, who's this? Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Well, this is Dan in Beaverton.
Hey, Dan, yeah.
In Berkeley.
Dan, you're breaking up terribly on us. I don't know if you I could barely hear you, so try again real quick on your point.
Okay. The alumni pregame tailgater in Berkeley, did you get any feedback on that?
No, I don't know anything about it.
It was incredible. Scott Barnes gave one of the most heartfelt and inspirational speeches I've heard. And then he was followed by Ken Simonton, and he turned it into a pep rally.
Nice.
It was just very motivational and brought everybody together. It feels like we're all backed into a corner together. So it's like everybody's united, stronger and more committed than ever. And it just makes you want to stay the course and support the team.
I love it, Dan. Thanks for that report. I hadn't heard that. Maybe we should get Ken himself on, the great Ken Simonton. We may follow that up soon. Appreciate the call. We take a break. We had a guest request, and it's come through, and we're going to hit that up next. We appreciate you joining us today on the Joe Beaver Show on Joe Radio. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. Louis Quintana, our expected guest, but we've run into a little bit of a snafu. So we'll try again with Coach Quintana. In the meantime, as we get ready for the remainder of today's show, and if we can't do, if we can't get Coach today, maybe we can tomorrow. A couple of quick reminders. Check out Beavers Behind Enemy Lines later for the latest from Alan Thayer, and he's going to have more commentary on the YouTube channel there, YouTube Beavers Behind Enemy Lines, on the motion to dismiss, what it all portends, perhaps, what it means. Check that out later this evening when it'll be posted. We really appreciate his time and knowledge when it comes to some of these matters that are well above our pay grade. Most things are, including the life that Tim Ewis lives now as your local financial, your local Edward Jones financial advisor. He is hosting us again this Friday, and we encourage you to join us for the Joe Beaver Roadshow with a free lunch featuring, and I remember a year ago, one of the best. I'm not sure who was cooking up the burgers, but they were delicious. They'll be back at it again in the parking lot across the street from Tim's Edward Jones offices, 545 Southwest 2nd Street downtown. That's 545 Southwest 2nd Street downtown in Corvallis. We'll be in the parking lot across the street from Tim's offices near the skate park, but far enough away from the skate park that you may see the kids having a good time there, going up and down in that skate park area with the dog park. Has the dog park, any of you canine owners, has the dog park been repaired, and is it open for business again? I haven't been there for a long time, so I don't know if there was some sort of vehicular accident, evidently, with a fence broken down, and thus the dog park couldn't take your dogs there because they were no longer fenced in.
Right.
I thought I saw somebody working on that fence as I drove by. So if anybody can report via the University Honda text line, yeah, it's fixed, and yeah, I've been taking my dogs there, that would be a public service message. But we're going to be near all of that on Friday at Tim Ewis's office across the street in the parking lot for a Joe Beaver Roadshow. Mike Parker, John Warren, and a pleasure to welcome one of our favorite people, Coach Louis Quintana, on the Joe Beaver Show. Louis, sorry we're running a little bit late here. Appreciate you making time for us. So you're on the track now. Tell us how excited you are about what's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, we're pumped. It's always great to be on the show, so it doesn't matter what time of the day.
Thank you.
This is good. We're excited for Wisconsin to be tomorrow morning, race on Friday morning. Some tough weather, which is great. We want it to be cross-country weather, some rain, some wind, maybe some mud. That's all good for the bees. So we're ready to go.
How has the season gotten off, Louis, just in terms of where you'd hoped you'd be heading into this big meet? Where are you right now with your roster and your team performances early in the fall?
Well, team performances, like, we really have only had one big invitational. That was at the Dellinger invite. And we didn't run a full squad that day. We didn't run Grace. Grace was still training, doing some altitude stuff. And so we were shorthanded there, and we performed well enough, I thought, but certainly we're much better than we showed. Grace, Haley won the race, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What we found was some really good pieces to our roster, though. Sage Brooks is a transfer in from Syracuse. was 17th in the race, which normally is a really good low stick. It's a great front runner. So having her probably end up being our third or fourth this year is really a big, big get for us. So we're looking forward to this weekend. I think we're underranked. I mean, we are underranked.
Mm-hmm.
30th going in nationally, and I still think that this team can be a top 12 team, maybe a top 10 team.
Wow. Louis, what do you make of the underranking? I mean, it almost feels like in all sports, it sometimes feels like that's our lot here. How do you feel about where you're ranked?
Yeah, I think for sure, because we were ranked 17th, and then we dropped out of the rankings after the Dellinger meet because we were fourth, and we got beat by an unranked Cal Poly Slow, but we didn't run Grace Featherstone, who's one of the best runners in the NCAA, so everybody should have known that we would have been closer to Oregon, who's, you know, but the West in our region is kind of underranked throughout the country, and it's kind of the West Coast bias thing. It happens in our sport as well.
When you say, quote, should have known, is it your sense that when you see the polls and the rankings come out, that not everybody obviously did know? Should have maybe, but didn't.
Correct. You know, and I think part of it, too, is the COVID extra eligibility. You know, Grace and Kaylee are taking a sixth year, and a lot of people maybe don't take that sixth year, but they, you know, really made it a point to come back and continue to help push and elevate this program into the national limelight. So maybe the pollsters didn't know that Grace was still on our roster. So then they thought, hey, that's just 13. That's their squad right now. But, you know, we know what we have. We're excited about Friday, and you know, we're ready to take a step.
So 8 All-Americans combined outdoor and indoor, indoor and outdoor, fall, cross country, all of that. 8 All-Americans. Do you see that for this year?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Grace and Kaylee for sure, you know, if things go well, they should duplicate that in terms of the fall, be All-Americans. And then, you know, they both just have an indoor season left, so they don't have outdoor.
Mm-hmm.
But our team's still really good outdoor. You know, we still have, you know, Jade Whitfield, who's really emerging as a thrower. We have Annika Morsdorf in the multi-event. So we have some Dee Dee Norman in the high jump. We have some pieces that, you know, people that are going to potentially step into that next level All-American squad, you know, as we get going here.
Louis Quintana, our guest. Coach, how familiar are you with the Wisconsin venue, and what kind of challenges does it pose for your squad?
Very familiar. We've been going to this meet every year since my second year here at Oregon State. And then I went for about 4 or 5 years previous when I was at Arizona State. So very familiar with the course, understand the terrain. A lot of the women on our team have run this course before. We are running 2 true freshmen in our top 7. So that's always impressive, in my opinion, because our team is pretty good for 2 true freshmen to come right in and be in the mix. So they're excited about getting on the course. It's great to have Grace and Kaylee to help kind of navigate the nerves with the youngsters. They've been there and done that, and they can keep them calm and ready to go. But, you know, we know this course very well. We train for this course. It's a very big invitational for us. Even though it's the middle of the season, it's a really important meet for us to establish some momentum going into the championships in 2 weeks with Pac-12s.
We are dealing with the particulars of a particular meet in Wisconsin Friday. Louis, and the big picture stuff, we've been so football-centric, as you know the world is, but you're in the middle of your fall season. How are you and your program navigating the uncertainties and anxieties with recruits and parents and so on, your own student-athletes, et cetera? Is it business as usual, or is it business never like it's been before from how you're trying to handle things right now?
You know, I think for our athletes, it's business as usual, and they're dialed in, they're doing work, you know, they're not necessarily distracted by it. It's just something that they might read about occasionally. For me, I'm deep in it, and I've been in the Pac-12 my whole entire coaching career, you know, since 2001. So it's sad. You know, I think there's a lot of different emotions for me because I'm like, boy, this is just, I couldn't believe this whole thing has happened. You know, like the dissolution of the whole conference is gone. It's just weird, you know. So I don't even really know how to describe it other than like an odd feeling. But in terms of recruiting, you know, our sport is a very popular sport.
sponsorship and 350 teams out there, and there's a lot of teams that are would be considered mid-majors that are very good in our sport. NAU, New Mexico, some of these teams that are just niche programs are really, really good. And so it's not really going to affect us, you know. Depends on, like, what the biggest thing is, the uncertainty of where we're going.
Yeah,
that's the problem that we're all navigating as coaches is, you know, and that's an issue with recruiting. You know, you try to build your team based on the conference that you're in. You know, we're built for the Pac-12 right now. We put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the last 6 years in recruiting the right kids for the conference, and now we're moving somewhere that we have no idea where we're going. So that's unfortunate, but we're, you know, we're behind, you know, Beaver Nation and football. Like, I'm a huge football fan, so I'm there every weekend that I can, and trying to look at tickets that are cheap enough for me to fly to games that I can't be there, you know, like at home. So,
yeah.
You know, we're just excited about what Coach Smith is doing on the field, and, you know, just proud to be, you know, putting on the singlet every weekend.
Do you just concentrate on your program and your pitch and the school at hand, because there's really nothing else you can do? You don't know.
Correct. Yeah. You know, and honestly, like, administration's been great. Everybody's, you know, the coaching staffs, every, you know, this is an interesting place, a fun place, great place to work. You know, the coaches get along really well. You know, we talk to one another, and, you know, Jonathan, you know, like, sometimes you go to, like, you're at a big time football school and you never talk to the head coach, you know, but I talk to Jonathan all the time. He'll text me after meet, you know, say, "Hey man, good job."
Yeah,
it's a really cool place to work. And be a part of. So I don't feel like that's going to change. The people aren't going to change. The people are the people. You know, that's the way Corvallis is going to be.
All right, last thing. We've got about a minute. Tell me about your transfers. Is there anybody coming in that specifically was an All-American or did some great things at their previous institutions?
Yeah, so we're running actually three transfers in our top seven this weekend.
Hmm.
So Sage Brooks, the one I mentioned earlier, who's been a nice find for us, ran at Syracuse for 2 years, but she's from Montana and she really wanted to get back to this region of the country, and so she's come here and really flourished, been on fire for us, so that's big. And then I'm actually at the track right now with Abby Pradier, who's a NCAA qualifier in the 1500 grad transfer from San Francisco. She's stepped up into our number five or six runner for us, so we have some great pieces. But the one that you all need to know, who's going to be really good over the next 3 or 4 years, that will be on your show at some point, is Ruby Broadbent, who's a freshman from Canada. She's the real deal.
Hmm.
So
nice.
She's going to be very good, and someone that's going to be someone to keep an eye on this as the season continues to unfold.
Coach, we look forward to meeting her and others of your outstanding student athletes we've enjoyed getting to know through the years. Great luck to you and your team in Wisconsin this weekend. Safe travels, and thank you for your time. We look forward to staying in touch throughout this whole process. Have a great time this weekend, Coach, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Louis Quintana, our guest. Thanks to all of you. And that we haven't talked to a lot of coaches outside
about
the reality. And in football, you don't go to Jonathan Smith's not talking about what they're saying to recruits and
right.
You know how that. And that's a subject that never goes away. It's the undercurrent of everything. And every once in a while, we will have a slight conversation about it.
We'll get a look at basketball on Thursday. We'll go over there, check out
practice. I think we're going to be doing our show live from men's basketball practice on Thursday. Media day tomorrow. We'll have Gavin Mars on from the men's basketball team tomorrow and more. Thanks for joining us on Joe Radio.